Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. At the age of 24, Colin Wright seemed to have everything he wanted. He was making a lot of money, he was successful, but he realized he wasn't happy. That realization led to him making a radical change. He broke up with his girlfriend, gave up his townhouse, sold or gave away almost all of his belongings, and started traveling the world, writing about his experiences. That was 10 years ago. Since then, he has done a lot of blogging, published many books, he hosts a podcast called Let's Know Things, and he's traveling the country on what he calls his Becoming Tour. He spoke in Des Moines yesterday, and tonight he'll be in Cedar Falls at Mill Race Co-working from 7 to 8:30. He is with me now. Hello, Colin.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being here.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And let's go back in time. This is a story I know you've told often, but it's a new one to a lot of our listeners. So let's go back to that time. You were 24 years old. By all outward measures, you were on top of the world. Tell me about the situation you were in and your realization that it wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah, by a lot of traditional metrics of success, things were going incredibly well. I had got a lot of the accoutrement of the goals that I had wanted to accomplish for a very long time. I was earning way more money than I thought I'd be making at that point in my life. I had a nice townhouse in a good part of town. I had a good deal of respect and prestige within my field. I was running a branding studio. But at the same time, there were a lot of things that didn't seem to fall into place. For some reason, it wasn't making me as happy and fulfilled as I thought it would. And as a consequence, I had a moment of realization, fortunately, where I was able to step back from things and take a good long look at my life as it was in its totality from that God's eye view and see the entire context and recognize that I was putting off a whole lot of the things that I actually wanted in favor of a collection of goals that I was told were supposed to be important to me by other people throughout my life.
They were the things that you had been working toward, though. So it wasn't just coming from outside. I mean, that was coming from yourself, too, right?
Yeah, and there were elements of that lifestyle that were incredibly satisfying and that felt very good. It felt good to work hard and to struggle and to accomplish things and to gain that type of reputation and the challenge of the type of work I was doing. There were elements of that that were wonderful, but they all presupposed this idea that I was supposed to care more than anything else in my life about the title that I had or the size of my business or the number of digits in my bank account, as opposed to other potential metrics of success, like being able to spend my time in a way that I actually wanted to be able to spend my time with people that I cared about, being able to go off and challenge myself in different ways, to be able to, in short, for me, one of the priorities that I was putting off was being able to actually travel. And I had told myself that this was a long-term goal. Maybe someday I'll like retire relatively young. I'll get to my 40s or something and then I'll start traveling. Not realizing as I thought that, that was the forefront of my mind. And in the back of my mind, I was assuming that's just the way things were supposed to be. Not realizing that I already had all the pieces in place that I needed to go do those things that I wanted to do. And I just wasn't allowing myself to see it.
Was there a moment that sort of hit you like a thunderbolt?
Yeah, there were several smaller moments building up to it, I think. But there was a moment where I allowed myself to take essentially the first vacation of my adult life. I was 24 at the time, and I'd been running businesses with very mixed success since I was 19. So this was my like third business, I believe, and it was the first one that was actually successful. And I hadn't taken any time off. I'd been working at 150% that entire time to try to make things work. And when I allowed myself to take this vacation with my then girlfriend, we were able to both step away, actually, and take a look at the way that we were living life and realize how all those pieces fit together and recognized that they were predicated on this kind of false assumption that these goals were actually the most important thing in the world. And for both of us, what we realized actually in that moment, looking at things from that distance, was that there were other things we were putting off that we could be pursuing, and that in some ways we were actually staying together, keeping this lifestyle that we had built going for the kids. But the kids in this case was the professional and social life that we were building in LA.
Now, a lot of people have had these moments in their lives, and it may lead someone to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to just scale back at work. I'm going to make sure I can take some vacations. I'm going to create some boundaries between my work life and my personal life. You did not go that route. You decided to make a radical change, to go in completely the opposite direction. Did you consider refining the life that you had built?
Well, the life that I had built was so extreme in one direction, where everything was oriented toward professional success of a very specific kind. And so there weren't a lot of pieces that I could moderate and recalibrate or adjust or swap out small components here and there. I think in general, that is an excellent idea for most people. For me, though, the way that I'd built things, there wasn't a lot left. If I tried to reorient anything, I would have been left with kind of this empty husk. I had filled my life full of this thing that was no longer meaningful to me as soon as I took a closer look at it and as soon as I allowed myself to realize what I was doing and to try to understand what value that provided to me. And I realized that if I wanted to actually get out and do these things that I'd always told myself I wanted to do, the ostensible reason that I was earning all of this money and working this hard was so that I could someday go out and travel the world. And the idea, or the realization, that I might be able to start doing that sooner rather than later, in my 20s, you know, where I could still bounce back from all of the mistakes that I would no doubt make while out on the road, that was a very, very compelling thing to me. And so it made sense to make some more structural changes rather than superficial ones.
So you and your girlfriend decided that you would break up amicably. In fact, you put it off for a few months as you went through the changes that you felt you needed to make. But one of the other big changes that you made right at that point was deciding to become a minimalist, to embrace minimalism and to divest yourself of most of your worldly belongings. Tell me about that process.
Oh, it was quite the process. I'm very glad that I had that runway of about 4 months. I set a deadline 4 months in the future after we had that trip and I decided that something needed to change for me. Set a deadline 4 months in the future and gave myself that time to figure out what the next steps would even look like, because it's not something I'd ever considered. And back in the day in 2009, I mean, it's hard to remember in a way. A decade is a very long time. Smartphones were still relatively new and social media was kind of a new thing. So there wasn't a lot of conversation about the concept of minimalism. There was one guy that I knew about at the time who was writing about it, named Leo Babauta, who runs a website called Zen Habits. And he was kind of the modern OG in this space, at least. This is an idea as old as human beings, but in terms of blogging about it, he was the guy who was kind of first to the finish line there. And for me, it emerged as just a practicality. It wasn't something where I'm thinking, you know what, I'm going to simplify my life and change everything and get rid of all of my stuff. I just looked around at all of the stuff I'd accumulated and I couldn't figure out what to do with it. And I definitely wanted to recalibrate my lifestyle to focus on experiences and to focus on going out and challenging my perception and experiencing new things and meeting new people and in engaging with different cultures and different ways of seeing the world. And all of the stuff that I had kind of was getting in the way of that. I like imagined a life where I was able to travel full time, but then I had this space that I was paying rent on to store all of this stuff that I wasn't using, that existed in this space that I was locking up, not because it was useful to me, but so that no one else could have it. I had this image in my head of me as Pharaoh, like burying my riches so that nobody else could have it, just out of this weirdly perverse sense of needing to protect stuff just for the sake of having that stuff, not for any practical purpose. So I started to get rid of things, not knowing exactly where it would go, But by the end of that four-month period, I had gotten rid of everything that wouldn't fit into a carry-on bag.
You actually cataloged how many things you owned at that point in your life. How many?
I got down to about 50 things at the low point. But at a certain point, I actually stopped posting that because there was an understandable, I think, misunderstanding. People thought that I was trying to encourage everybody to own like 50 things, which is not what it's all about. Ideally, that is not what most of us do. It makes a lot more sense for most people in most circumstances to not own only as few things as will fit in a carry-on bag. But for me and for my priorities, it made a whole lot of sense.
What did you learn from that process? Because you had to spend a lot of time with the items you were getting rid of.
Yeah, one of the biggest realizations is that for most of us, we don't need all the things we think we need. We are convinced that we need a whole lot of things. And there are a lot of incentives out there for not bad, not evil people, but people just working according to the economic incentives that are in place to spend a great deal of their time and mental energy and resources trying to convince us that we need a bunch of stuff. And in a lot of cases, we do not actually need those things. We don't need them to be fulfilled, so we don't need them in any top portion of Maslow's hierarchy of needs sorts of senses, but we also don't need them in any fundamental way. These are not things that add anything substantial to our lives, and this is the reason that in a lot of cases we'll go through the process of deciding to buy something and we'll buy it, and the high point of that experience will be the buildup and the purchasing. And then once we have it, we realize that this is not actually a thing that serves us in any real way. And so going through that process for myself, which I probably should have realized beforehand, I worked in branding. So I was one of those people who was hopefully not evil trying to convince people to buy things in a lot of cases. But it's a different thing when you're on the consumer end, because nobody wants to feel like they've been manipulated, and nobody wants to feel like these things that seem to have such significance in our lives maybe actually don't, or at least not to the degree that we convince ourselves they do.
What was the hardest thing to let go of?
Oh, you know, it wasn't actually a physical thing. Getting rid of or letting go of the sense of identity that I'd built around being a particular type of person, about being a business person, an entrepreneur who worked hard and played hard and had a certain degree of respect and credibility within my field, that was something that I'd worked incredibly hard to achieve. And it was something that I didn't know if I would manage. But then I got there. I got to a certain point on that ladder anyway.
We are going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking with Colin Wright. He is on his Becoming tour right now. He'll be in Cedar Falls at Millrace Co-working from 7 to 8:30 tonight. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Colin Wright. He, a long time ago, 9 years ago, at the age of 24, seemed to have everything that he wanted. He was very successful. He was making a lot of money. But then he decided to make a 180-degree turn. He broke up with his girlfriend, gave up his townhouse, sold or gave away almost all of his belongings, and started traveling the world and writing about his experiences. Right now, he is on what he calls his Becoming Tour. He spoke in Des Moines yesterday. Tonight, he'll be in Cedar Falls at Millrace Co-working from 7 to 8:30. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well. If you have questions for Colin, of course, but also if you have made a radical life change, we would love to hear your story about what made you decide it was time for a change and how you did it and how it's worked. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So, Colin, you got rid of all of your stuff. You sort of shrugged off this identity that you had created for yourself. What was the next step?
The next step was figuring out where to go, which, as somebody who had never left the country at that point, which was ridiculous, as somebody whose supposed priority was to try to travel the world and see new things and experience new things and learn in that way, I had never been anywhere. So I was trying to figure out where to go, and I had this idea to start a blog, which I called Exile Lifestyle, and the intended use for it was to try to share what I was learning along the way with other people, while also using it as a platform, as an excuse to reach out to other people that I wanted to communicate with and learn from. And I decided that as somebody who had never been anywhere and therefore who had very little credibility in terms of figuring out where to go, I'd instead ask the world to do it. I figured everybody else on the planet was a better judge of which country I should visit first than I was. So I had my readers vote on what country I would go to.
So you're taking off on this adventure, but you're also changing your profession. And in many ways, your profession became being a public person. Travel almost as performance. You had to have adventures. You had to do things that your readers would think would be interesting because that was now your job, right?
For the first year or two, there was definitely that sort of pressure, absolutely. Fortunately, I got a better sense of who I was and what kind of work I actually wanted to do after that first year or two as I was figuring out what this new lifestyle would look like and how it would fit in with the work that I was doing. And unfortunately, as a consequence of that, I was able to take a hard pivot away from the travel guy sort of career, which usually orients around, you know, doing travel shows and writing guides to places and doing tours and such. And nothing against that. It turned out that was not my thing. It wasn't what I enjoyed. And instead, I was able to use travel as kind of a catalyst for other things. It served as the source of inspiration and information that then fed into other work, like writing books and eventually starting a podcast.
So as you had people choose where you would go, you had also decided to spend about 4 months in each place that you went. Why 4 months?
So 4 months was kind of a placeholder at first, because with that, like so many other elements of this project, something that I hadn't seen anybody else do something similar to it. So I didn't have an instruction manual, unfortunately. It was a placeholder until I could figure out how long I actually wanted to spend in these different places. And it originally came to me because I had spent 4 months during my runway period, leaving LA, changing absolutely every aspect of my life and getting rid of everything that I owned and recalibrating everything. It seemed like a whole lot of time, but also a short enough period that there is the encouragement to get out and do things and try things. And for travel in particular, I figured that would give me the right blend of staying long enough that I wasn't just like in a tourist area, superficially glazing over what happened to be in the area. I was there long enough that I could build actual relationships and get to know a place and rent an apartment and try to live as much like a local as is feasible for that particular place. But I could also visit multiple countries each year, which was something that was important to me as somebody who didn't have a lot of points of comparison from different countries.
As someone who had wanted to travel your whole life, I mean, I think a lot of us have a bucket list. We have read about or seen, you know, enough about places in the world that there are certain places we are drawn to. You had to have that, didn't you?
Not really, at least not with any specificity. I had most of what it was, actually, and this is part of the reason that I didn't fit squarely into that travel guy type of career choice. I'm not big on the visit the Eiffel Tower, visit the pyramids sort of travel. For me, it's more about being in a different place and going to the grocery store and walking down the street and having a favorite cafe and meeting people and seeing how they live their lives and figuring out how all the pieces go together and picking up snippets of the language, basically trying to see what things are like normally as opposed to seeing an extreme version of that place. And as a consequence, a lot of that doesn't fit well within a bucket list. My bucket list item, if you could say that there was one, was to get out and see a bunch of different places so that I could experience that complexity, all the myriad tiny little differences between the ways that we live our lives, even in the instances of life where there are so many similarities.
So give me an idea as you started doing this. I mean, you made some mistakes early on. I mean, first tell me about the things that went wrong. What wasn't working for you that you thought would?
Well, at first, I figured I could do a version of what I was doing in LA, and I could continue to do branding work from the road, just at a smaller scale. And it turns out, especially back in 2009 and 2010, the internet was not widely and equally distributed. And when I was living in my second country, New Zealand, which at the time did not have as many undersea cables going to it delivering internet, the connection speed was just so bad that you could barely send an email with an attachment to it, much less Skype with anybody. So my understanding of how things fit together and basic fundamental infrastructure was flawed enough that it completely decimated my ability to earn any money. And that led to kind of a hard pivot, fortunately, it turns out, into writing books full time. But a lot of the early mistakes, and that's not to imply that I don't continue to make mistakes. It's a constant growing experience. But a lot of the early mistakes were around showing up to a place and assuming certain things would be a certain way, and then operating as if that's the case, and then learning the hard way by making some silly mistake at the grocery store that, oh, it just simply does not operate that way in this particular place.
I'm talking with Colin Wright. He is an author, a blogger, and the host of a podcast called Let's Know Things. And he also is on a tour right now, sharing his experiences with people. He calls it his Becoming Tour. And Colin, tell me, once you kind of figured out how to do this, tell me what your routine was. You would put up on your blog that, you know, you're looking for a new place to go. Your readers would vote on where you were going to go. Would you always go to the place that got the most votes?
Yes, I would. Yeah. And there was definitely the potential, the internet being the internet, that I would get a vote for some place that I couldn't go, or where people thought it would be horrible to go, North Korea or something like that. And honestly, given the opportunity, I would still go to those places as long as it's not an active war zone or something. I'm not a journalist. I don't have that type of credibility, that type of skill, that type of ability to get into those types of places anyway. But I decided early on that any place that I was voted to go, I would go, short of those caveats. And I thought, and this has been proven true in the years since, that there wouldn't really be a bad place to go. Like, there's a lot of pre-existing perceptions of where would be a lovely place to go and where would be a horrible place to go. And honestly, I felt like if I went to a place and it was boring, or if I wasn't growing as a consequence of being there, that would be on me and not on that place. So it seemed prudent that I challenge myself and strengthen my ability to find the interesting and to find the joy in whatever place I happened to end up. So it didn't seem like there was a way to lose having that voting mechanism out there, even though it might have seemed otherwise.
Now, a lot of people who have traveled extensively for long periods, whether they did foreign exchange programs as students or Fulbright scholarships or were in the Peace Corps, that kind of thing, a lot of people I've talked to talk about really this intense period of loneliness that is the beginning of their time somewhere in another country, because creating those relationships, getting to know people, is difficult. There's the language barrier often, but also just, you know, you're new and you're trying to make connections with people, and it takes time. You gave yourself only 4 months, and you write extensively about how the relationships that you created with people really were your priority. So tell me your system. How did you do it?
With mixed results is how I did it. Yeah, I mean, you get, like with anything, you get better with things over time, even if you're not great with it to begin with. For me, I actually found the period of loneliness, and this is something that still happens to greater and lesser degrees depending on where I go, the loneliness that usually lasted for at least a couple of weeks, that was something that pushed me out the door. And that loneliness was valuable unto itself because it gave me the opportunity to sit with myself after a lifetime of feeling like I needed to fill absolutely every single moment of every day of something productive. I would be in this new place where I didn't know anybody, and maybe the internet was terrible, so I couldn't connect with people back home. So there's nothing familiar. Everything was a challenge. I didn't speak the language. I didn't understand how things operated as soon as I left my home. And that really forces you to do some very difficult thinking. It forces you to be in your own head. But it also forces you to face all of those incredible frictions that you will encounter as soon as you walk out that door. It forces you to embarrass yourself repeatedly until you figure out how to pronounce things correctly. It forces you to get lost on a regular basis until you figure out how to get around. And it forces you to feel that sense of impending doom that you might get when you approach somebody new, hoping to make a connection, hoping to get some advice. Like, there's that sunken feeling that you get in your stomach because you know that you might get rejected or ignored or made fun of. You have to face it. And without that loneliness, I'm not sure I would have done that as consistently and even enthusiastically.
So did you develop sort of a trick of the trade? Is there something that really works for you when you're trying to make these connections?
A couple fundamental things. Fundamentally, I would say go into a place and don't try to make it into a familiar place. Don't judge it according to existing standards that you might have for a place. If you can go in fresh and understand it for what it is and use metrics that make sense within that particular location, then you're much less likely to come across as judgy or like that horrible stereotype of the tourist who comes in and decides that everything needs to be the way that it is back home or it's terrible. In general, go into places and try to lead with value, try to be a valuable part of the community, try to, you know, buy things and try to help people and just try to generally be a gracious, happy, friendly person that people want to have around. And in general, too, recognize that most people everywhere you go on the planet, 99.99999% of people are good. They are just people. Very, very similar to us in terms of what they want out of life. And just like you, just like most people, if they see somebody in trouble or if they find that somebody is from somewhere else and they are just visiting their home, if that person comes up to them and asks for help or asks for a suggestion of some place to eat or whatever else, chances are they'll do what they can to help. They'll do what they can to point you in the right direction. And in my experience, in a lot of cases, even more than that, people will generally give you the shirt off their back when given the opportunity because people around the world are just generally good.
Tell me about one of the places that you traveled and when you really felt like you were able to integrate yourself to your environment.
You know, almost every place I've gone, that's been the case eventually, to greater and lesser degrees, and it's taken longer.
Okay, well, just pick
others.
One and tell me about it.
Yeah, so I met a whole lot of expats at the very first place that I went. I lived in Argentina as my very first country that I was voted to go to. And by the time I left, I had this great network of people from around the world that I had met, a lot of people with some shared interests, but most of those shared interests revolved around going to other places and experiencing local culture and things like that. And then that segued then into a bunch of connections with locals, people who were interested in the same thing but were not currently traveling for whatever reason. So they were locals who were interested in sharing what they had locally, but also they'd been to a bunch of other places and therefore had a bunch of contrasts to offer and shared experiences that then we could connect over. That's a relatively easy situation to get into. And it's something that it's a great starter type of community to build. Here are a bunch of other people who are going through similar things. It gets a lot more difficult when you go into a place where that's simply not an option or it's not as common for a variety of reasons, including cultural and economic reasons. Going into Calcutta and living there for a while, it took a whole lot longer to build a community. And it was only because I had one or two people who were helping me out from day one, essentially, who had reached out and who were interested in just meeting up and talking about other things, that I was able to get any kind of toehold from the beginning. Because it's not the type of place where everybody speaks English. It's not the type of place where people have the opportunity to travel. And a lot of the people that I eventually became very good friends with after the course of several months, as opposed to several days or weeks, a lot of those people are just simply not able to travel. It's not something that's in the cards for them.
So you had this arbitrary deadline, too, of leaving after 4 months. Were there times when you changed that, when you thought, you know what, I've found a community here. I'm just really getting to where I want to be in this place. I'm going to stay.
Yeah, there have been a couple of places where I've extended a bit. opportunity costs being what they are, I was very realistic with myself that choosing to stay in one place was not being able to visit another place, which put that into pretty significant context, because I really wanted to experience all of these places. But there were some places like India, for instance, where something happened where it took me a lot longer to get started. And in terms of Calcutta, it's the land of paperwork, just getting set up even with an apartment took a very, very long time. So I ended up extending my stay until 5 months rather than four.
I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, how did you pay for this?
Primarily writing books. The very first year, I was still consulting with some of my old clients, but that, when I was in New Zealand, became not something that I could maintain, and I realized that would be the case around the world to varying degrees for various reasons. So I leaned in completely into writing books, which is something that I dabbled in, and I've always been a big book reader. I worked at an indie bookstore for 5 years when I was in high school and college, and just been a voracious reader my entire life. So I thought, you know, maybe I'll write a book. Let's see if anybody will pay me for something, if I can write something valuable enough that people will actually be willing to pay for it. And it didn't happen all at once, and it took about 8 months just to get to the point where I could cover my bare basic skeletal costs.
Well, and we're going to have to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking with Colin Wright. He is an author and speaker traveling around the country right now. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Colin Wright. And about 9 years ago, he was very successful by most standards, but decided that he was unhappy and wanted to make a radical life change. He got rid of all of his stuff and he started traveling the world, writing about his experiences. And Colin, just before the break, I was asking you how you paid for all of this. You also decided that you needed to live with a whole lot less, spend a whole lot less money. So how much approximately would you say you were spending per year when you were traveling like this?
It really varied based on the place that I was living. But I, looking back at expenses and accounting data that I have available from some of the countries, particularly places where just the cost of living is far lower, I was doing okay and not having to worry about money, making around like $25,000 a year. And a remarkable thing happens when you're able to reduce your expenses in that way. You're able to free up a whole lot of time that you would otherwise spend on making money. And I'm certainly not allergic to making a living, and it's nice to have enough money to do the things that you want to do. For me, I travel relatively inexpensively. I live frugally, so I'm able to not have to worry about that quite so much these days. If you were really into luxury yacht racing or something like that, if that's your priority, you probably would need to make a lot more than that. But for a lot of people, I think there's a perception that we need to have somewhere in the neighborhood of infinite dollars in order to be secure. And in my experience, at least, and the experience of a lot of people I know who are doing things that align really perfectly with what they want out of life, it's simply not the case. They can earn far less than they think that they actually need and still afford all of the important things.
This is not a life that a lot of people can pursue. You started in a very privileged position, although you've made a lot of decisions that have allowed you to pursue this. But I'm curious. I mean, there are so many things about this life. I suppose on the front, you know, you think, well, that sounds like a lot of adventure and a lot of fun. I think about all of the things that mean a lot to me in my life that I would have to give up to pursue this, and it would be devastating. Does this life make you happy? I mean, you're always on the go. You're not putting down roots.
It makes me very happy. But something that I try to tell people as often as possible, most people would not be happy with my life. It is oriented so completely toward the things that are priorities for me that it gives me all of the things that I want and very few things that I don't. But that's so specific to me. It's like a custom-tailored suit, some kind of custom-tailored clothing. It's something that can fit perfectly on somebody, won't fit perfectly on most people. And that's absolutely the case with lifestyles, too. And what's important here, and what's important when you're looking at minimalism or just life recalibration of any kind, is taking the time first to figure out what those important things are, so that you're not discarding stuff or changing things dramatically to try to live somebody else's idea of what an ideal lifestyle looks like.
You gave a talk at one of the TEDx events a while back about living on extremes. And you said extremes are easy. Although it seems to me that that's where you live. You like to live on the extreme. You are one thing or the other.
It's a fairly extreme lifestyle compared to the way most people live. It is definitely on one end or the other of a variety of different spectrums, probably. But it's a very, very balanced lifestyle, too, for me, in the sense that it's very sustainable. It allows me to focus on my health, to focus on my relationships. It allows me to focus on growth in a sustainable way. It allows me to do work that I care about, things that I'm proud to have my name on. So it's something that, by certain standards, seems very extreme, but I would argue that part of the reason it seems that way is that the way that we're told we're supposed to live, or the way that it's implied that we should live, is often quite extreme in a variety of ways as well.
Although, not everyone could live this way.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, that's the other thing. It's important to recognize it will look different for everybody, and not everybody will be in the same position, as you mentioned,
position. It wouldn't be sustainable if everybody tried to do this.
Not under the current way the economy and other such things work. No, exactly.
Well, I think the same could be said of all of life as well. I mean, it would be very difficult to continue our species, our communities, if everyone was moving every 4 months.
I'm not sure that's true. I think we could absolutely change structures to allow people to be more peripatetic. The way that we have things set up now, that sets the default, and that sets kind of a level tone for what our expectations are. But our governmental systems, our economic systems, they're all predicated on sustaining that model. And if we suddenly, everybody woke up one day and decided that they wanted to live this way, which is unlikely, but let's assume that that happened, I would assume that we could change things and structure things to make that actually work. Just as we could, people ask the same thing very often with minimalism. If everybody lived that way, wouldn't it collapse the economy? Well, yeah, it probably would. It would collapse the economy as it exists today, but we would also be producing less nonsense and convincing fewer people that they need to buy things just for the sake of buying things. So we would have to restructure things in a way so that we made less random tchotchkes and produced more stuff that actually served people and the purposes that they want to have served in their life.
So I want to ask you about the future. You know, most of us do build a life and we do put down roots. And first of all, I mean, let's drill down a little bit on what you said about this allows you to focus on relationships. From the outside, that sounds like the exact opposite of what this allows you to do. Because, you know, a lot of us, as we go through life and we make our choices, for me, I realized that relationships were the most important thing in my life. And it made me make some radical career choices as well. But that made me want to be more stationary and invest in the people that I love. And moving around makes that really hard to do. So how does your lifestyle help you focus on relationships?
It allows me to see more of the people that I want to see more frequently. And what you said just there, too, it's predicated on a particular way of doing relationships. And that will be specific to the person and a particular person's needs. So for you, the most important relationships in your life are most meaningful when you can see those people every day. You wake up next to them, or you see the same people at the local coffee shop. Those are definitely things worth investing in and worth reorienting your life around. For me, the people that I'm trying to go out of my way to see are located all over the place. And as a consequence, I'm able to see friends from around the world, root systems that I've put down in different places around the world, these different homes that I have. I'm able to reconnect with people on a very regular basis. Something that I usually tell people that sometimes nails this home where other things don't. I see my parents a whole lot more now than I did back when I lived in the same country as them consistently. Because now my priorities are oriented in such a way that I have the time and the freedom of movement to go visit them on a more regular basis, because that's important to me.
So something else that human beings do is age. We grow old, and traveling like this becomes a real challenge physically. You're still very young, but do you think about the future?
Yeah. I'm always trying to build what I think of as like a flexible framework rather than a solid foundation. And that flexible framework is, it's making sure that I have savings, making sure that I have insurance, making sure that I've got different types of assets, whether they're knowledge assets or whatever else, to ensure that if and when I want to pivot, I'm able to do that, and I'm able to do it without completely devastating all of the things that I've built and learned and value. I've already changed the way that I do things in the past couple of years. The first 7 years of the last decade, I did the 4 months at a time thing. In the years since, I've spent a year apiece in Wichita, Kansas, and Memphis, Tennessee, as parts of different types of experiments, and to make sure that I'm not unhappy when I'm not moving around, which was a genuine concern for me for a bit. I wanted to make sure that I could be happy and fulfilled even without that regular enforced novelty to a certain degree that comes with travel that you can't really avoid, to make sure I could entertain myself and grow and educate no matter where I happened to be. And this tour, too, has been part of that challenge. The first 6 months of it, I traveled full time in a motorhome, a 1985 Holiday Rambler that I fixed up that I'd never done anything with automotive repair or plumbing or doing electrical work. And I had to learn how to do that. So little adventures that come back to the same core purpose in terms of first principles. What travel allows me to do can be accomplished in different ways. That type of growth, that type of exposure to novelty, that type of exposure to different ideas, to different perspectives that I get to see the world from, if only for a short period of time. And I think that there's a potentially infinite number of different ways to achieve the same thing for me and for anybody else who may not enjoy travel or may reach a point where travel is not as feasible for whatever reason. You can do the same thing by engaging in different activities that allow you to get those same ends.
Are you saving for the future?
Yes. Yes, I am. That's something I realized very early on, is that travel is a lot more fun when you know you can afford groceries. And part of that is making sure that whatever your feast and famine cycle happens to be, or whatever your current situation, making sure that you take that type of time and invest that type of effort into making sure that the you of tomorrow is not regretting all of the things that you focused on today.
You're traveling around the country right now on your Becoming tour. So you're talking to people about the process of figuring out who you are and your place in the world and meaning in your life. So what have you learned? Who are you? Who is Colin Wright? And what gives your life purpose?
I enjoy learning. I enjoy valuable frictions, being challenged in a way that might be moderately miserable at the time, but allows me to come out the other side knowing what I'm capable of surviving, of subsisting through. I like trying to create value for other people, whatever that happens to look like, to try to share what I know, to share what I have, to try to help people get to where they want to be. I enjoy the pursuit of knowledge and information and trying to put things together and understand things more, and then trying to recombine those things into little packages of information that other people might find interesting and valuable as well. And whatever shape that might take, I've discovered, is something that I find fulfillment in. And there's just myriad different shapes that it can take and that it has taken. And I feel incredibly fortunate that I'm able to involve myself in and investigate all those different directions.
I think a lot of people right now are asking themselves, and a lot of young people who are trying to find their place in the world, they're trying to think, how can I make a difference in the world? A lot of people are looking at climate change and a lot of the other challenges that we're facing as a planet and thinking, okay, I need to do something to invest in the future of our planet, of our species. Is that something you think about?
Yeah. And it's something I get asked that a lot, too, actually. And what I usually tell people is it's going to be completely different for every single person. Everybody has different leverage, different powers, different privileges, different situations that they find themselves in for whatever reason. So if you have gobs of money, you might be able to leverage that money by investing in things that will help us deal with these very serious issues. If you're somebody who doesn't have tons of money, but you have a platform of some kind, you have followers, you have influence online, you have a group of people in your neighborhood who trust what you say, then it might be more about communication. I would think bare base level for most of us, civic engagement is probably the best thing that we can possibly do. While we still have civic structures that we can rely upon, it's very important to get out and vote and to try to understand what it is that you're voting upon and what repercussions those issues might have. And then doing your best just to be educated in general about how all of the pieces of what you do and what you're learning and the work that you do and the different things that you do in your life that are not work-related but still vitally important, how those connect to other people and other issues as well. Because there might be changes that you could make to that that would also have very, very substantial influence on what happens next on the larger scale.
What does the future look like for you? You're not you're still doing a lot of traveling, but you're not doing the 4 months in one place, 4 months in another place. From all the experiences that you've gained, what do you think you want the next 5 years to look like?
Oh, 5 years is tricky. I can give you the end of the year. Once I finish this tour, I'm doing Cedar Falls and then Minneapolis, and then I am done with the 10-month tour. And then after that, a couple of weeks after that, I am flying out to London, where I will be living with my girlfriend until next year.
And why a year?
Basically the way that we're planning it is around the legalities of the situation thus far. You can get 6 months in London if you're a United States citizen without having to get any special visa. And then while I'm there, I'm going to be figuring out which is the best path to take to make sure that we can spend more of that time together.
Is it important to you to not plan too far into the future?
I do plan up to a point, but looking back 5 years ago, I'm an incredibly different person from who I was 5 years ago. I think most of us could probably say that. So I don't want to put anything too firm and unchangeable into place now, in the same way that I wouldn't have wanted the version of myself 5 years ago to decide what I do day to day today. I like to make those flexible frameworks and make sure that I have the resources and connections and knowledge or whatever I need in the moment to make decisions and take advantage of opportunities as they come along. And then beyond that, I try to set realistic durations. So I say, 6 months, I will be here. At that point, we will check in and see what we want and then make a new set of plans probably for the next 6 months or so.
As you've said multiple times, not everybody would actually like the life that you've created for yourself. A lot of people think that maybe they want something like that and find that they don't once they try it or run out of money really quickly.
Yeah.
So you inspire a lot of people, but you don't think that they should copy you, be inspired to live like you. What do you want people to take away from your experiences?
Ideally, what they do is they take a look at their own life and figure out what their priority is. For me, travel and living in this way and being able to spend my time and energy and resources on these things, that is so vitally important to me. And I'm able to do that now after a decade of focusing on that and trying to put things together to fit those priorities. And so for everybody else, they shouldn't try to focus on my priorities or anybody else, anybody that they see on Instagram living what seems to be a sexy lifestyle. Chances are you're just seeing the outside version of that. And ideally, even if you did have that outside version of it, it probably wouldn't make you as happy as you think it might. And instead, ideally, you spend your time, energy, and resources on the things that are vital to you. Focus on those things, and first and foremost, take the time, give yourself the time to figure out what those priorities actually are.
I've been talking with Colin Wright. His most recent book is Come Back Frayed. He is traveling the country on what he calls his Becoming Tour. He'll be in Cedar Falls at Mill Race Coworking tonight from 7 to 8:30. Thanks so much, Colin.
Thanks for having me.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.